It's official. Eclipse is in Chapter 11. Diamond responds to ExxonMobil's Jet A tantrum. And AAI gets creative in finding work for its senior engineers. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, November 26, 2008. One of the more pessimistic scenarios envisioned for Eclipse Aviation has come to pass. The company announced on Tuesday it's seeking court approval for debtor-in-possession financing and procedures for the sale of most of its assets under Section 363 of the U.S. Bankruptcy Code. In essence, unsatisfied creditors are providing the money to keep the company open, at least on paper, in exchange for taking control. Eclipse filed for Chapter 11 protection in U.S. Bankruptcy Court in Delaware Tuesday morning, simultaneously announcing an agreement for the sale of its assets for a combination of cash, equity, and debt to an affiliate of eTurk Aviation of Luxembourg, a major Eclipse investor. The sale agreement is subject to higher and better offers which might be received during a public auction expected to happen in January. CEO Roel Pieper commented, quote, "In the face of unprecedented economic challenges, it is clear that the sale of the Eclipse business through the Chapter 11 process is the right course of action to maximize the value of the business, secure its future, and protect the best interests of Eclipse stakeholders, including customers, suppliers, employees, and creditors." Unquote. He added that a successful sale will position the company to move forward and solidify its position. While the arrangement will allow the company to remain open and meet current payroll until the sale is complete, it's not clear whether the company will have the components needed from outside suppliers to resume building aircraft. If the result of the auction is simply a sale of assets, depositors and customers who've taken delivery of incomplete aircraft, people who are known in bankruptcy speak as liabilities, may be out of luck. Eclipse also announced on Tuesday what it termed the voluntary departure of Peg Bilson from her position as president and general manager of the company's manufacturing division. The world's largest seller of diesel-powered aircraft is responding to last week's statement by ExxonMobil that its Jet A product is not suitable for use in diesel engines. Diamond Aircraft said in an official statement, quote, "We are as surprised as you are by this circular and are contacting ExxonMobil Aviation to address the matter," unquote. ExxonMobil appears concerned about its liability in cases of aerodiesel engine failure, citing issues involving the fuel's ignition point, lubricating qualities, and potential for freezing. Diamond concedes that technical excuses are valid general concerns, but says they were all addressed as part of the engine and aircraft certification process. The company also points out that the DA-42 was certified exclusively for operation on Jet A and Jet A-1 fuel, and not diesel fuel. Diamond is telling owners not to take no for an answer. Quote, "ExxonMobil Aviation does state that customers insisting on fueling their aircraft with jet fuel must sign the indemnity agreement, and as such it is clear that no fuel retailer should be refusing to fuel your airplane with jet fuel." Unquote. AAI Acquisition Incorporated is unable to continue development and testing of the A700 very light jet, at least until the Russian economy recovers. But the company announced on Monday it has developed some marketable expertise it will now make available to other industries. AAI says it's ready to provide engineering and manufacturing services to companies and organizations seeking composite design and technology expertise, including aerospace firms and even custom automotive companies, green energy developers, and anyone else who could benefit from its technology. When it shut down, the company said it would retain a number of senior engineers, and it's apparently getting creative in finding them work. In particular, the company touts an out-of-autoclave composite manufacturing technology that's been approved by the FAA. The Air Transport Association of America says it will fight the United Kingdom's decision to revise and greatly increase the amounts collected under its air passenger duty. ATA says the tax already adds $60 to tickets on airlines flying in from abroad, and is scheduled to jump to $90 by 2010. ATA President James May says the duty masquerades as an environmental fee. Quote, "The funds collected do not go to environmental projects. This is an illegal action which we expect to be settled in the courts." Unquote. The reference to illegal involves the Convention on International Civil Aviation, also known as the Chicago Convention. The tax varies by the distance traveled by the arriving flight, in effect taxing travel well outside the territorial boundaries of the UK. Up next on ANN, the Association of Flight Attendants files suit against Delta. Forbes outs the nation's five most stressful airports. And the U.S. Air Force blames left yaw roll phenomenon for the crash of an F-15. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for November 26th. I'm Paul Plack. When unionized pilots for Delta and Northwest reached an agreement with Delta management on a post-merger contract, that agreement called for the Airline Pilots Association to submit an application to the National Mediation Board, seeking a determination that Delta and Northwest now constitute a single carrier. Approval by the NMB would trigger a 14-day countdown for other unions to demonstrate 35% employee support for a union representation vote at the combined company. Pilots were the only major unionized segment of the Delta workforce, but Northwest was heavily unionized. Two major union groups at Northwest were ground workers, represented by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, and flight attendants, represented by the Association of Flight Attendants. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution reports the AFA has now filed suit against Delta management, claiming that rushing the deadline for the 35% requirement amounts to illegal interference in a union election. The union is concerned it won't have time to convince non-union Delta attendants that they'd be better off as AFA members. Delta is telling its flight attendants they would benefit more from a seniority integration process dubbed fair and equitable by the feds. That's what Delta's proposing, versus the union's seniority integration process based on date of hire. AFA also charges that starting the seniority integration process before a union representation vote could force the AFA to act on behalf of the interests of the Northwest attendants, which would cast the union in an unflattering light among the non-union Delta FAs right at a time when they're considering how to vote. Delta spokesman Kent Lander says the AFA's position is, quote, wrong as a matter of law and does not serve the interest of our combined flight attendant group, unquote. Much is at stake for Delta in the outcome of the vote. Non-union flight attendants from the pre-merger Delta outnumber former Northwest attendants by a wide margin, but AFA came close to gaining representation rights at Delta back in May. If the union can't pull the combined workforce together under the AFA banner, it will lose its right to represent even the former Northwest attendants who are already members. Presumably, Delta management would welcome the chance to operate with a fully non-union group of flight attendants. Forbes is out with its ranking of the most stressful U.S. airports just in time for the holiday crunch. The list uses DOT data and assumes that stress is proportional to late arrivals and departures. Based on data covering September 2007 to December 2008, four of the top five most stressful airports are in the congested Northeast Corridor. They are, in order, Philadelphia, JFK, Newark Liberty, and LaGuardia. Chicago O'Hare was the only airport outside the New York area to make the top five. It was tied for second worst with JFK. On-time performance generally improves the farther west you go. Los Angeles International handles more traffic than JFK or O'Hare, but rates much better in delays. The American Automobile Association credits LAX's more numerous gates, parallel runways, and less congested airspace. Three people died Monday morning when a Beechcraft Baron 55 twin spun to the ground while on approach at Nashville International Airport. The Associated Press reports the plane hit a hill in a rural area about 12 miles north of the city, near a small cluster of homes at about 10:45 a.m. The flight had departed from Hot Springs, Arkansas that morning and was on an IFR flight plan. Officials said rain and low visibility may have been a factor. Witness Joey Dixon commented, quote, "I looked out and saw it just doing 360, just circling as it was coming down. It went below the tree line, and I heard the crash and called 911 and took off towards the site," unquote. The NTSB will investigate. The U.S. Air Force is blaming a combination of mechanical and human factors for the fatal crash of a two-place F-15D fighter during a red flag exercise July 30th at Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada. The pilot in command, Lieutenant Colonel Thomas Booley, was killed. An observer pilot, a Royal Air Force flight lieutenant, escaped with minor injuries. An Air Combat Command Accident Investigation Board report released this week finds the pilot momentarily exceeded a technical order maneuvering limitation in place when the F-15D has fuel in the external wing tanks, triggering a spin-inducing anomaly called left yaw roll phenomenon. The report adds the violent and prolonged spin, believed to have been worsened by a nose radome imperfection, left the pilot spatially disoriented, which hampered recovery and made ejection necessary. The observer ejected first and suffered only minor injuries. The pilot in command ejected just 0.4 seconds later and did not survive. The aircraft was assigned to the 57th Wing at Nellis and was valued at $38 million. Still ahead, Australia stands by the Boeing Wedgetail despite a 28-month delay. Those slick new mobile phone boarding passes have a few bugs. And NASA says Jupiter can teach us much about our solar system. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, November 26th. I'm Paul Flagg. Boeing has suffered a series of embarrassing delays in developing some of its civilian aircraft. But Boeing Integrated Defense Systems is not immune to embarrassment either. In 1997, Australia made the commitment to Project Wedgetail, involving the procurement of at least four of Boeing's 737-700 Airborne Early Warning and Control E-7A Multi-Role Electronically Scanned Array Radar Antenna Surveillance Aircraft. Military officials down under had no idea that their wait for the aircraft would end up being even longer than its name. The plane's claim to fame is its extremely versatile electronically scanned radar antenna array. The system, which is built by Northrop Grumman, allows conducting several types of search and control functions simultaneously, but it turned out to be a systems integration nightmare. Australia was to get its first plane in 2006, and Boeing insisted it was on schedule. But in June of that year, the Australian government announced the company was admitting development had fallen behind by 18 months. Even that estimate proved optimistic. And the company now projects delivering the first plane a year from now and mission readiness sometime in 2010, more than 28 months late. So is Boeing at risk of losing the order? No. The Australian newspaper reports that throughout the ordeal, Australia has not only stuck with the Wedgetail, but has taken advantage of options for two more, beyond the four originally ordered, for a total outlay of $4 billion. Defense Procurement Secretary Greg Combat told the Australian Command and Staff College that while the Wedgetail is on the government's Projects of Concern watch list, there are no plans to cancel it. Quote, "Just last week there was a summit held in Canberra where we discussed how we are going to move things forward. I'm pleased to say that progress was made in those discussions, but there is much more work to be done yet," unquote. Then he added, quote, "This is probably the project that keeps me awake the most at night," unquote. You may have seen this one on your local TV newscast, a new system which allows American Airlines customers to check in from home and then instead of bothering with a paper boarding pass, just download the barcode image to your phone or other mobile device. A quick scan at the airport and you're on your way. Well, 2 weeks ago, American offered the option for a select group of flights, it would be fair to say there have been a few bugs. Gavin Liu is managing director at UserCentric, a Chicago-based user experience consulting firm. He tried the new process and put it charitably, quote, "The user experience is not yet perfect," unquote. Liu was dismayed to discover that a phone that can receive email isn't enough. You also need mobile internet browser capability to download the boarding pass barcode. American never mentioned that in its rollout. Liu added that the TSA security checkpoint he went to couldn't read the image until the third scan. When he got to the gate, the mobile boarding pass did not include the seating group assignment, and the gate agent there couldn't scan it. Another gate agent finally entered the seat assignment into an old-fashioned terminal and was able to clear him to board the plane. Liu applauds American for working to accommodate users of mobile devices, but says the airline needs to better describe required equipment and more clearly set expectations, and that passengers need to understand that many variables will exist at different airports. NASA is officially moving forward on a mission to conduct an unprecedented in-depth study of Jupiter. The mission is called Juno and will be the first to place a spacecraft in a highly elliptical polar orbit around the giant planet to understand its formation, evolution, and structure. Scott Bolton, Juno principal investigator from the Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, says Jupiter can teach us much about our solar system. Quote, "Jupiter is the archetype of giant planets in our solar system and formed very early, capturing most of the material left after the sun formed. Unlike Earth, Jupiter's giant mass allowed it to hold on to its original composition, providing us with a way of tracing our solar system's history," unquote. The spacecraft is scheduled to launch atop an Atlas rocket from Cape Canaveral in August of 2011 and reach Jupiter in 2016. It will orbit Jupiter 32 times, skimming about 3,000 miles over the planet's cloud tops for about a year. Designed for minimal power consumption, Juno will be the first solar-powered spacecraft to operate at such a great distance from the sun. Jupiter is more than 400 million miles from the sun. That's almost five times as far from the sun as Earth is. Professor Dave Stevenson, co-investigator at the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena, says Juno's camera and nine instruments and, quote, "extraordinarily accurate determination of the gravity and magnetic fields of Jupiter will enable us to understand what is going on deep down in the planet. These and other measurements will inform us about how Jupiter's constituents are distributed, how Jupiter formed and how it evolved, which is a central part of our growing understanding of the nature of our solar system," unquote. Juno is the second spacecraft designed under NASA's New Frontiers program. The first was the Pluto New Horizons mission, which launched in January 2006. As it turned out, just 7 months later, scientists decided Pluto's not really a planet. And finally, the Transportation Security Administration knows it has public perception issues and has turned to time-tested tools to better define its problems, a consulting company, and focus groups. USA Today says it received a TSA report on a $200,000 study by the Manhattan-based Blue Lime consulting firm that brought groups of frequent flyers together to discuss TSA screeners and gathered screeners to discuss passenger behavior. Blue Lime met with travelers from New York City, Minneapolis, and Washington, and screeners at Chicago O'Hare and New York's John F. Kennedy airports. Among the conclusions, passengers think screeners are poorly skilled and poorly paid. TSA signs at airport queues, created by lawyers, are too hard to understand. Business travelers and families don't like sharing screening lines with each other. From the screeners, Blue Lime learned that passengers are disrespectful, seemingly ignorant of why the precautions are being taken, and don't understand why they have to remove shoes and give up their shampoo. Blue Lime has prepared a list of suggestions for the TSA, and you'll already see some of them over the holidays. Many airports have instituted slower-moving family screening lines. TSA screeners have been urged to avoid slouching, keep their uniforms clean and pressed, and greet passengers with a smile. Perhaps the first change you'll notice will be visible from a distance. Overhead monitors will run videos explaining why the precautions are needed. In place of paragraphs packed with lawyer speak, new signs will feature simple, clear messages such as, "Please be ready for security." Another, positioned at the end of the line, says, "Did you collect all of your belongings?" It includes pictures of a wallet and keys. And, in an obvious nod to the frustrations expressed in the screeners' focus groups, one sign says, "Please give our officers the respect they deserve." But yes, they'll still take away your shampoo. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, ANN's Jim Campbell talks about issues which faced air shows during 2008 and looks ahead to 2009 and beyond with John Cudahy, president of the International Council of Air Shows. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. This Aero Briefing and our daily special feature are off tomorrow and Friday for the U.S. Thanksgiving holiday. Our 1 megabyte touch and go will be out Friday with headlines of breaking news, and we'll return to a full normal schedule for AeroCasts on Monday, which, by the way, will be December 1st. Are you ready? I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.